This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, new results from MESSENGER, looking for life on Earth, and carbon in the early universe. Compared to the other terrestrial planets, surprisingly little is known about Mercury. The closest planet to the Sun, its daytime surface temperature can reach some 700 Kelvin, while temperatures on the night side of the planet can drop below 100 Kelvin. Observations from ground-based telescopes on the Earth reveal very little about Mercury, but since 2008, the MESSENGER spacecraft has been mapping the planet in detail, and March the 21st saw the publication of two studies using some of the data collected. MESSENGER, short for the Mercury Surface Space Environment Geochemistry and Ranging, is the first spacecraft to visit Mercury since Mariner 10 in the mid-1970s, and, after three flybys of the planet, the craft entered orbit on March 17, 2011, making it the first spacecraft ever to actually orbit Mercury. Among the many scientific goals of the mission, MESSENGER carries instruments to investigate the planet's surface composition, its geological history, and the structure of its magnetic field. On March 21, 2012, two papers were published in Science Express detailing new results from some of MESSENGER's sensors. The first described a new topographic model of the northern hemisphere of the planet, constructed using a laser altimeter to measure the changing height of the surface features as the spacecraft passed overhead on its orbital path. Mariner 10 photographed less than 50% of the surface during its three flybys more than 30 years ago, but MESSENGER is mapping the entire surface for the first time, and in much greater detail. Using the new maps from the laser altimeter, the research team have identified features which indicate that Mercury was tectonically active on a large scale for much of its history. Mercury has a large, dense core, much larger relative to the diameter of the planet than that of the Earth, and does not currently experience active plate tectonics in the way the Earth does. The new topographic maps, however, show evidence of large-scale movements on the planet's crust relatively recently. In the early life of the solar system, there were large numbers of small bodies and asteroids which would frequently collide with planets, creating some of the impressive craters we see today. One such crater on Mercury is the Caloris Basin, a giant impact feature 1,500 kilometers in diameter. The basin was somewhat filled in with fresh lava after the impact, creating a flat floor within the circular crater walls. The new topographic data from MESSENGER show that there is a large-scale slope across much of the northern hemisphere of the planet, and in some places the flat lava plain of the Caloris Basin floor has been raised by this slope so that it is actually higher than parts of the older surrounding crater rim. Since lava settles at a constant height above the centre of gravity, much like water in a glass, this height difference across the basin implies that the large-scale geological event which caused the hemisphere-wide slope happened after the early period of heavy bombardment in the solar system. The second paper describes a new model of Mercury's magnetic field, calculated using spacecraft tracking data from NASA's network of ground station facilities, a series of satellite dishes used for tracking and communication with spacecraft in the solar system. By regularly tracking MESSENGER during the first few weeks after it entered orbit around Mercury in March 2011, the team have been able to build up a detailed model of the gravitational anomalies in Mercury's crust. These anomalies are places where there are variations in the density of the rock below the surface, which affect the orbit of the spacecraft as it passes overhead, and they can be used to build up a picture of the internal structure of the planet. Based on these new observations, the model proposed by the researchers includes a solid silicate crust and mantle overlying a dense silicate-rich layer and an iron-rich liquid outer core, and perhaps a solid inner core. This new model is somewhat different to that expected from our knowledge from the other terrestrial planets, and the researchers point out that these new results will mean changes for models of Mercury's evolution. Many hundreds of extrasolar planets are now known, with more being discovered all the time, but so far we know very little about them individually. One thing of particular interest in the search for life elsewhere in the universe is determining the contents of exoplanetary atmospheres. This can be attempted by observing the light reflected from a particular planet, and looking for absorption features in the spectrum of the light due to chemicals such as methane, water, and oxygen. Such studies are difficult, however, because the light reflected from a planet is much, much fainter than the light from its parent star. But now, in a study published in Nature on February the 29th, a team of researchers have tested a way to search for the signatures of life on other worlds by using observations of our own planet. The team, led by Michael Sturzik of the European Southern Observatory in Santiago, Chile, used the 8.2-metre Very Large Telescope to observe Earthshine, sunlight which has been reflected from the daylit side of the Earth up to the Moon and back again. Using a telescope the size of the VLT to observe the Moon may sound like overkill, but this is the first time that an observational technique has been able to detect evidence of vegetation on a planet. The trick to the technique lies in measuring the polarization of the light, the orientation of the oscillations of the light waves, and how this polarization changes with wavelength across a spectrum. Light transmitted directly from a star is much brighter than that reflected from a planet, but the starlight itself is unpolarized. Light reflected from a planet, on the other hand, is partially polarized, and the two signals can be separated. The form of the polarization depends on the nature of whatever surface reflected the light, and on the characteristics of the planet's atmosphere. By using these observations of Earthshine, the researchers were able to determine the fraction of the Earth's surface which was covered by clouds, oceans, and vegetation. The researchers made two sets of observations, the first on April the 25th, the second on June 10th, 2011. The alignment of the Earth-Moon-Sun system was different during the two observations, with different parts of the Earth's surface responsible for reflecting light up to the Moon. The differences in the data collected during the observing sessions show significant differences. In the results from April, there is a strong feature due to vegetation, but this feature is not present in the data from June, suggesting that very little of the reflected light came from cloud-free forested regions on the Earth's surface. The observations provide a valuable means of testing theoretical models of Earth-like exoplanets in preparation for future telescopes which may be able to carry out similar but far more tricky observations for other planetary systems. Finding evidence of life is one thing, but proving the existence of intelligent life is, of course, quite another. And finally, among the exciting results presented at the UK's National Astronomy Meeting in March, held this year in Manchester, was the discovery of a vast amount of gas and dust around a supermassive black hole in the very early universe. In a talk on March the 28th, team leader Bram Venemans of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg presented the new results. The European team used the IRAM interferometer, an array of radio telescopes which detect emission at millimeter wavelengths, to observe a galaxy known as J1120 plus 0641, a galaxy so far away that the light we detect here on the Earth today left the galaxy when the universe was a mere 740 million years old, 1/18th of its current age. The observation showed a surprising amount of carbon, an element created mainly in the nuclear fusion reactions which power stars. Since carbon is created in stars and distributed throughout galaxies in violent supernova explosions, there was not expected to be large amounts of carbon this early in the history of the universe. The presence of such large quantities of dust and carbon-rich gas this early in the universe's history adds to the evidence that there was a massive burst of star formation in the relatively short time between the Big Bang and the time the light from this galaxy was emitted. The amount of dust detected shows that this particular galaxy was forming stars at a rate 100 times higher than the star formation rate in our own Milky Way today.